We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, and welcome again to the Bearer of Weird News, the first podcast that has been minted and sold as an NFT for much more than it's actually worth. Especially because this is a topical show which will be full of dated references 3 days before it even gets released. I am your host, Matt Harvey, the curator of news oddities. It's like Ripley's Believe It or Not, but instead of wild wonders, we've curated a collection of things that don't make you mad, but are certainly disappointing. Just so you know, before we get into it, I am actually starting to build a bit of a body of festivals for 2022, which is a little bit exciting for me, and it's going to be great to have something for you guys to not attend next year. So I've got a brand new show in the works. I've been building it all through the pandemic, and it's going to be all about jobs that I no longer have to worry about being fired from. So that should be a good time for everybody. And the show is called Wage Against the Machine. I haven't locked in any festivals yet, but keep an ear out, and we'll get into it once there's any details to announce. I'll be announcing them right here, of course. But until then, I will once again be the bearer of weird news. So first, some headlines. Clive Palmer has been ordered to pay $1.5 million after losing a copyright case to the band Twisted Sister after he illegally used a sound-alike for his political ads. When asked what they thought about this, his ex-nickel mine employees all said, "He's not gonna pay it, no, he ain't gonna pay it." Unfortunately, now I have to pay Twisted Sister for that joke, so please share this with a friend and sign up to my $1.5 million tier level on Patreon. I'd really appreciate it. Kim Jong-un has called K-pop a vicious cancer that merits work camp execution. As first reported by the New York Times, the 37-year-old leader's plan to suppress K-pop music was revealed through internal documents smuggled out of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. They deemed the Southern cultural imports a vicious cancer that is actively manipulating North Korean children to alter their attire, hairstyles, speeches, and behaviors. Kim has become increasingly hostile towards international cultural influence over the last year, going as far as to outlaw mullets and skinny jeans in an effort to stop Western influence. And look, guys, you know, I didn't think I'd ever get to this point, but I think I can get behind the mullet ban, which really just goes to show that if you stop and listen to people, then you can really find some common ground. New Zealand's offer to resettle Australia's offshore refugees is still active as the US-Australia deal nears its end, despite the fact that Australia has been a total butt about the very generous offer. Jacinda Ardern's office confirmed the refugee offer has not changed. However, the Australian government is worried refugees will get famous, and then we will be forced, by Australian law, to try and claim them as one of our own, despite our desperate efforts to keep them away. I don't know if you've read the full Federation document. It's in there. It was the condition we gave for letting New Zealand no longer be a part of New South Wales. You can look it up, that's a fact. Australian researchers discovered why only two of an echidna's four penis heads can become erect at one time. Echidna wives are very interested in what the scientists have to say. Meanwhile, echidna men are heard saying, "See, it's nature. It's not got anything to do with me. Come on, come on, come on." That story again. Australian researchers discover why only two of an echidna's four penis heads can become erect at one time. While some people are surprised by the volume of penis heads, those people need to remember that echidnas are famous for being covered in pricks. Right now, there is a moil looking to figure out how to break into the lucrative market of echidna circumcisions. They're gonna be a millionaire! A video posted by South Australia Police to YouTube showing an officer shooting a machine gun shows a prominent ABC logo placed on the shooting range wall. Now, a South Australian policeman said it is not a reflection of police views of the national broadcaster, but anything on display is for the purposes of replicating a realistic training environment, as we have with other training facilities. A statement as upsetting as it is accurate. Other realistic training facilities they've presumably set up are refugee detention centres, Black Lives Matter protests, and for the real hardcore fans, a home slash apartment setting where they can get training beating their partners. Oh, that got a little dark there, didn't it? Sorry about that, guys. It's just the realities of police work. Speaking of police, police in central West England executing a drugs warrant on suspicion that there was a cannabis farm have instead uncovered a cryptocurrency mining operation. The farmers said that they weren't doing anything illegal. They had started the mining operation in order to try and get government funding from Australia because we are desperate to fund any kind of mining. Now, running a crypto mine isn't illegal, but the owners were actually arrested for being insufferable about decentralizing money and truly think the instability that means a tweet can cause you to lose the GDP of a small country in an hour is a good thing. Plus, something something blockchain, whatever, whatever. West Midlands justified the mistake by saying, "We heard lots of people were visiting the unit at different times of day. Lots of wiring and ventilation ducts were visible, and a police drone picked up a considerable heat signature from above. They are all classic cannabis factory signs." Lesser known signs that you can look out for are blue-faced children being rolled out of secret exits, glass ceiling repairers, and a surplus of purple hats being delivered. You can hear all about that story in the upcoming film adaptation, Willy Wonka and the Disappearing Cannabis Factory. Now, no arrests have been made, but police seized the IT equipment and found that the operation had been stealing thousands of dollars worth of electricity directly from the mains. And ordinary people don't get to steal from corporations without repercussions. If you want to steal, then at least donate to a political party first. It's economics 101. Media regulator Ofcom's research showed that half the adult population of the UK watched online pornography during the pandemic. The rest of the chart breaks down: an eighth of the remaining population watched porn on DVD, a quarter had old magazines, a sixth of the people watched porn through their neighbour's window, and 1% were making the porn. And the remainder spent their time lying on surveys while having a wank. According to the research, Pornhub has a far larger audience than mainstream television channels such as Sky One, ITV4, and BBC News. That's mostly because many of those people worked out early that the BBC in BBC News isn't the kind of niche interest that they usually take when looking on Pornhub. I'll wait a moment while the people who pretend not to have watched porn during a pandemic leave the room. Okay, should be gone by now. Given the larger audience size and the distrust of mainstream media sources like the BBC, people like Clive Palmer will be advertising their next political run purely on Pornhub, as then they'll be able to get a little bit saucier. And in order for major newspapers to break down the content of the ads, they'll have to confess to spending time on Pornhub while at the office. Earlier this month, it was reported that the world's largest food company, Nestlé, had internally acknowledged that most of the company's mainstream food and drinks products do not meet a recognized definition of health. I don't know who this is news to, as Nestlé is a company that owns Nesquik, Maggi, and whose boss doesn't think that water is a human right. Executives at Nestlé are considering what new commitments to make on nutrition and are aiming to unveil plans this year. The group is also updating its internal nutrition standards, known as the Nestlé Nutritional Foundation, that were introduced under former chief executive Peter Brabec-Letmathe, who characterized Nestlé as a nutrition, health, and wellness company. Nestlé considers itself a nutrition company? Ooh, this is is a bigger example of lack of self-awareness than McDonald's starting selling salads. I'm not going to Nestle for nutrition. I'm going there because I want a lot of sugar to overwhelm the growing sense of emptiness inside that cries out like a feral cat in the night. Now, Nestle claims that it is a health and wellness company. Yeah, that tracks. All wellness companies peddle harmful crap under the guise of making you an immortal god of health. So it actually sounds like Nestle is already well on its way, and it may even give Goop a run for its money. Staff members at a recycling centre in Perth's southern suburbs have been charged after cash was discovered among items on a conveyor belt. It was just before all the toys from Toy Story, which is why nobody noticed when all the machines came to life to scoop up some random toys out of a fire at the end of the third movie. Everyone was busy deciding what to do with the money they'd just found. Police said that they were called to the centre after receiving a tip-off about $1 million, which had been located among the recycling material in the form of $50 and $100 bills. But police say an investigation established that the actual quantity of money was far less. It was in fact only $40,000. Well, this is why everybody's getting arrested, right? Wasting police time. $1 million? That's a crime. That is a crime worth investigating for any corrupt cop. But $40,000? That's not even enough to hide in a secret bank account, to accrue interest and then disappear into a foreign country. Just a waste of police resources, really. Police were also told that the staff had been encouraged to remain quiet about the discovery. Yeah, no shit! Yep, alright, so confession time, guys. I once split $200 with a security guard that we found on the floor at an old job. That place doesn't exist anymore. Over 10 years ago, and this is the first time that I have ever talked about it. $40,000? That is everybody shuts their fat mouth money for sure. The only reason somebody reported them, they weren't cut in on the money. After several search warrants were executed, the trio was charged by summons with possession of a stolen or unlawfully obtained cash, and they are to appear in court at a later date. And I bet you, like me, are looking up your trusty book of precedents to find out the well-known and oft-cited case of finders v. keepers. Well, according to Australian law, if you stumble upon a $50 note on the ground, you could be charged with theft if you decide to pocket it instead of handing it in. Go to Court Lawyers, which has offices across Australia, says stealing includes instances where you find something of some value and decide to keep it, calling it larceny by finding, as opposed to when you illegally receive cash via a bribe from an official for, say, a sports team or a car park. That's just good politics. Mattel is honouring former Minister of Foreign Affairs, former Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party, and woman displaying the right amount of finger space to force choke a subordinate, Julie Bishop, for being a true trailblazer in politics and the roles that she has occupied since, giving her a one-off Barbie doll that is, thankfully, not for sale. Bishop's involvement with Mattel aims to show girls as young as 5 that they can achieve the same career goals as boys. Yes, Julie Bishop is a paragon of equality, as she was a lawyer who represented CSR against victims of asbestos-related diseases like asbestosis and mesothelioma, and fought compensation claims from workers, proving that even women have what it takes to knowingly oppress the powerless and terminally ill. Finally, women can be treated like men. We push their indiscretions to the side when they're rich enough. True equality achieved. The Greens, a party of Bernie Sanders's that aren't nearly as popular, have called for the ATO Register to name and shame billionaires as part of an ultra-progressive agenda ahead of the next election. Party leader Adam Bandt says he wants Australians to know exactly how much money the very rich have and how much tax they pay. Other propositions I'd like to see added to the Greens' ultra-progressive agenda include adding JobKeeper riders to the list. No, I'm serious about that. A sticker out the front of workplaces that provides letter grades for the businesses indicating how much they exploit their workers. A ticking counter of money taken from the public purse to appear on the screen every time a politician talks on camera. An introduction of UBI as just another form of disruption capitalism. It's disrupting the exploitation industry. Moving on to art news now. Yes, here at the Bearer of Weird News, we make it our duty to talk with you, the listener, about the nebulous nature of art. Because if this can be considered art, even by technicality, then we are forced to face the endless and unanswerable question, what is... And here we are, faced with the question once more, as an Italian artist auctioned off an invisible sculpture for $18,300. Artist and person awaiting his spot on the next team for the Oceans franchise, Salvatore Garou, said that of his sculpture, it is a work that asks you to activate the power of the imagination. The whole team are actually in the photo with him, but you have to activate the power of imagination to see them. This sculpture definitely reeks of a child who didn't do their homework on time and is trying to pass off any old thing as work. Fortunately, this snake art salesman found himself in the arts where this sort of tricksy behaviour is not only okay, but actively encouraged. Art history is full of art that pushes the boundaries of what is considered art, mostly by not being a painting of Jesus or fruit. And I am here for it, guys. I am totally here for it. If you have 15,000 euro, or roughly $18,300, to waste on invisible art that is made of nothing, then go for it. As a struggling artist, I have nothing but the utmost support for anyone who managed to convince a rich idiot that their work is worth a stupid amount of money. Like when the art world was swept in the controversial art piece, Banana, taped to a wall, also known as The Banana, which also has big, didn't do my homework energy. Now, this piece is listed as an immaterial sculpture titled Lo Sono, which translates to I am, and finds form in its own nothingness. This is his justification. The vacuum is nothing more than a space full of energy, and even if we empty it and there is nothing left, according to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that nothing has a weight. Lo Sono's competing bidders push the price tag to 15,000 euro. The lucky buyer went home with a certificate of authenticity and a set of instructions. The work, as per Garou, must be exhibited in a private house in a roughly 5x5 foot space free of obstruction. Now, my problem isn't in selling an invisible sculpture. I'm all for grifting the rich and the stupid. My problem lies in his description and justification of the piece, claiming it to be an invisible sculpture. But things that are simply invisible aren't able to be walked through. It's a classic problem of the invisible man. He still exists, you just can't see him. So if I walked into this 5x5 empty space, I should, by all rights, bump into something that I can't see. Thus, invisibility. I didn't spend the greater part of my youth debating the impact of the nature of purely speculative superpowers for no reason. This is my time. And a sculpture is defined as make or represent a form by carving, casting, or other shaping techniques. So you've either got a multiverse reality phase shifted art sculpture, which doesn't exist in our reality, thus being able to walk through it while it still exists. Or if the sculpture is made of pre-existing particles that you didn't shape well, then you've not in fact created a sculpture. What you've created is a found materials collage. What I want to know is, what does the nameplate of the art list? Are the materials used listed as energy and imagination? If so, that's not a sculpture, my dude, it's a collage. And I am happy for you to grift the rich. Just do it correctly. This isn't even the first invisible sculpture grift, so he should be better at it. In February of this year, at the Piazza della Scala in Milan, Garou exhibited Buddha in contemplation, an invisible sculpture demarcated by a square of tape on a cobblestone walkway. He also installed Aphrodite cries in front of the New York City Stock Exchange, evidenced by an empty white circle. And this was supported by the Italian Cultural Institute. This guy has bigger and more audacious chutzpah than anyone selling NFTs. Except these art pieces won't negatively impact the environment, as they literally use no material. Now, Guru said of Lozano, "You don't see it, but it exists. It is made of air and spirit." The buyer remains unidentified, but I can confidently say that they're the sort of person who offers up thoughts and prayers instead of actual help after a major disaster, and then goes on to spend $18,000 on invisible art. Garou also said, "It is a work that asks you to activate the power of imagination, power that anyone has, even those who don't believe they have it." Which means it also doubles as the world's largest motivational art piece. And in my imagination, it's just a giant drop-dead Fred hanging from a string with the slogan, "Just imagine you did it." More art though, we're not done yet. What is art? Baby, don't paint me. Don't paint me no more. What is art? Long-time listeners may remember Casey Jenkins, the artist who had their grant money taken because the Australia Council is not at all afraid of what others, specifically the PM, may think, as all institutes who proclaim that they are challenging new concepts should do. Casey was set to self-inseminate in a piece called Immaculate. Casey is now suing the Australia Council for being ethically suspect after the work was cancelled due to the council's fear of a reaction from unnamed individuals within and or external to the Australia Council. The cancellation was decided barely 2 hours after Jenkins' project was heavily criticised by former Abbott government advisor and commentator Peter Credlin on Sky News. Documents obtained under Freedom of Information laws by The Age reveal that a day earlier, the Office of the Arts Minister, Paul Fletcher, had emailed the council under the subject heading, "Flagging Media Interest in Controversial Grant Recipients," asking for clarification on funding, including who made the decision and the criteria it met to be considered art. Well, mate, the fact that it is pissing you off makes it a strong contender for being art to start with. But I would counter, Minister, what criteria makes you able to be Arts Minister? You didn't even spend a portion of your youth wasting away in an expensive degree while you met interesting people, but ultimately got a degree that would do nothing for you. An arts degree. Although you did co-write 2 plays. Yes, that's right. I did a little reading, and I know that you wrote a couple of plays. Yeah, we know about those. And we know that they were poorly received. But if poorly received satire is the entry point for being the Minister for Arts, step aside, Fletcher! It's Matt's turn now. As Australia's foremost poorly received satirist, I take your crown and power as Minister. Jenkins has begun legal action in the Federal Court against the Council, demanding an unreserved apology and that the council's CEO and chair undergo intensive training on gender equality, LGBTQIA+ rights, and unconscious bias, seeking damages from the council for defamation and or injurious falsehood, breach of contract, and breach of a duty of care, as well as a declaration that the council's decision to withdraw the funding was unlawful or unfair. Now, the Australia Council aren't a part of any particular government, but given recently, the Liberal Party proclaimed that they have no duty of care to welfare recipients. Good luck getting anyone to confess that they owe a duty of care to anyone, especially an artist. After all, artists are bigger sponges than Muscle Bob Buff Pants. The council had approved about $12,000 in cash for Immaculate from a fund that claims it supports challenging new concepts in emerging and experimental art, but did stop to clarify, not that challenging. I mean, we meant it like a urinal statue or like a soup can, not making babies. The council said that it cannot be party to any act that could result in bringing a new life into the world, and that the ethical issues that will inevitably surround this project, possibly for years to come, are not something the council can take responsibility for. Presumably, they are concerned that the next round of funding will involve a multi-year art piece entitled Paternity Support, and they don't really plan on being around that long. They're just here to pork a few barrels and get a cushy retirement pension. Jenkins had better hope that they get a good payout because they will never get approval for funding again. I mean, they sued the Australia Council. But to be fair, it is probably the easiest way to actually get money for the arts in Australia. But continuing the art talk, it is now street art. Banksy, the street artist even your mum knows about. For years, Banksy has been placing his street art / social commentary on walls all over the world, except in the Arctic, because he's a coward. Tag the Arctic, you coward. The lawyer for a British greeting card company trying to stop Banksy from trademarking two of his most famous artworks in Australia says the anonymous street artist is acting in bad faith by trying to backdoor the country's copyright laws. Yeah, you know Banksy. Very famously all about trademarking his work and dancing between the delicate details of bureaucratic red tape. Huge bureaucracy guy, that guy. That is why his piece, Love Is in the Bin, didn't shred all the way. He didn't have the appropriate paperwork. Lawyer and guy whose headshot says, I don't know how to sincerely smile unless I just copyrighted your IP. Joel Masterson from Brunswick legal firm George Legal, who authored this diatribe, The Practical Value of Defensive Trademarks, an article about defensive registration of well-known trademarks and whether, despite its underutilization in Australia and its abandonment in other jurisdictions, it has any continuing practical value or relevance. Spoiler alert, he thinks it does. Hence the pursuit of Banksy, a person who insists that this whole profession is stupid. Seems juvenile to me, but what do I know? I'm not a big doo-doo head. Masterson said the legal battle could end up being taught in law schools around Australia as a precedent that shows street artists can't protect their work from being copied if they don't want to reveal their identity. Or perhaps even if they do. Showing his hand early as wanting to be the guy known for identifying Banksy. Hey Masterson, you seem to have dropped your ego. Doesn't quite seem to fit into that not so stuffy guy from the right side of the tracks jumper over shirt combo as he teaches a class of underprivileged kids the joys of destroying anonymous art and the things that go on to make life interesting chic that you have going on. He also maintained that the company was doing nothing wrong, not even breaching copyright by taking photos of Banksy street art and licensing them for sale around the world for merchandise with no proceeds returning to the artist. He sounds like nearly every festival venue runner that I've ever been exploited by. Apparently charging a flat fee for a venue hire, then artist fees per ticket, then charging audience booking fees is an acceptable business model and not even slightly arsehole-y nor exploitative. And like all good guys in history, they come out swinging with just exactly how it is that they aren't a bad guy. Because, you know, technically, I can do this thing. And like everyone and everything in history, if you technically can do it, then you absolutely must. There's no grey area there. Just ask the Liberal Party. They'll tell you all about it. Then, if you're an important electorate, they may even pork barrel you. Ooh. The fight will now be attributed by IP Australia, which oversees Australian trademark. Masterson said that he was brought on board by Full Colour Black last September. They were yet to finalise their legal position, but anticipate that they would pursue a bad faith argument to have the trademark rejected, saying, "We live in a free market economy, and as part of that, copying is encouraged. Copyright is an exception to that rule." Of course, the problem for graffiti artists is, if they identify themselves, they might face criminal prosecution, so they're in a bit of a bind. But that's their problem. Ah, the old head of the sand defense, also known as the la 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 not listening defense. It's a classic, really. If it doesn't impact me, it doesn't impact anybody. A defense used by uncomfortable looking white men since time immemorial. Which unfortunately does mean there is a strong precedent. And as it stands, we don't actually know for sure that Banksy is a white guy, so there is a strong chance that they would receive the legal defense equivalent that would be given to, let's say, an LGBTQI+ person, a female, a person of color, or as it is more commonly known, the "wait a minute, you have rights" defense. This might be Banksy's humblest battle yet. Moving on now to eating bug news. The cicadas of Brood X are everywhere for a little bit longer in certain parts of the US. And with that, some people have decided to start eating them. Others have taken to eating them because the pandemic is a dark hellscape of poverty and the bugs are literally everywhere. So why wouldn't you eat them? It's happening so often that the US Food and Drug Administration felt it necessary to issue a warning on Twitter saying, "Yep, we have to say it. Don't eat hashtag cicadas. If you're allergic to seafood, as these insects share a family relation to shrimp and lobsters." Associate professor in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife and Large Animal Clinical Sciences at Michigan State University, when they aren't busy clarifying what their job actually is or means, took time to talk about the possibility of eating bugs in the future and said, "It's bigger and bigger because of the desire to find another protein source that is more sustainable versus eating cows, pigs, chickens, sheep, and goats." And she has yet to comment on the lucrative and non-allergy triggering Soylent Green. Howard Russell, an entomologist at Michigan State University, says there's also a dare factor to consider, saying that people are eating cicadas for the novelty of eating big bugs, or they were triple dog dared to eat one. Not to mention the possibility of double dirty dog dares, double decker drunk dirty dog dares, who dares wins reboots, and Jackass segments. Or if you're on a budget, just a YouTube dare channel. However, if you're not allergic to seafood, can you give them a try? Here's what you need to know. Cicadas, along with shrimp, crabs, crayfish, and lobsters, belong to the phylum Arthropoda. As members of the Arthropoda include insects like crickets and ladybugs, as well as arachnids like spiders and ticks. So, when all the cows die and we're sustaining ourselves on last resort bricks of bugs like we all live in the tail end of Snowpiercer, the first ones to die will be those weak-ass allergic to shellfish types. Learn to eat food with a shell, you wimps! Sorry, that was unnecessary. Dr. Russell, you remember them from before? Said, aside from a few minor differences, lobsters are just big bugs that live in the ocean. but he was a double dog dared to say it, so I'd be careful when taking his advice. If you're not allergic to shellfish, you can eat cicadas. Yes you can. Cicadas aren't toxic to people, according to Ben Hotel, technical service manager at Orkin. So you'll be great to survive the bug-infested apocalypse roaming with your band of marauders searching for sustainable land to start your post-apocalyptic bug farm. It's just one stop away from Bullet Town. If you've reached Spandex Outfit Town, you've gone too far. On to fast food robot news! McDonald's! The unhealthy man's colon cleanse. McDonald's has the dubious honour of being a lot of people's first jobs, but that might be less of a thing as McDonald's is looking to replace human drive-through workers with a Siri-like AI. This slow replacement of human workers in terrible jobs with robots really should be something we celebrate. But without adequate services in place to support those people in other jobs, to get them free education or to put them in some sort of universal basic income, we need to lament the loss of the jobs first, like supermarket cashiers and fast food punching bags, depriving teenagers of some of the most important life experiences in their young lives, getting trod on by a workplace, learning respect for service workers through battling Karens, bonding with co-workers through shared suppression of rage, and existential motivation to move on through hatred of environment. They are all key learning experiences, all of them. Apparently, this Siri-like system can handle about 80% of the orders that come its way and fills them with about 85% accuracy. The other 15% end up being phone calls to your mum or an estranged sibling. No Siri, no, I didn't want to call mum, I want nuggets. No, nuggets, get me nuggets. But be warned, McSiri, if I get onions on my burger, I will dedicate the rest of my life to becoming a master hacker and will be working as hard as possible to put you down or to reprogram you so you never give onions to anyone again. You're on notice, McSiri. Just as a side note, I think there should be a new free version of foodstuffs. Because you've got your gluten-free, your dairy-free, your meat-free variations of items, right? I want a range of onion-free versions of popular items. I am tired of having to carefully pass through ingredients or through the meal itself to remove rogue onions. Now, according to McDonald's CEO Chris Kempczinski, part of the challenge in automating the drive-thru is that human workers have been too eager to help out while supervising the technology that might one day replace them, preventing it from accruing the real-world data crucial for further improving the system. I mean, it's frustrating enough as it is when your boss asks you to train a human who will eventually replace you, but when you're asked to help train a superintelligence that will put not just you, but your entire workforce out of a job, well, maybe they're within their rights to show that they can do it harder, better, faster, stronger. Kempczinski said, as soon as there was a question or a hiccup, the crew had a tendency to just jump in, and it took a little time to actually learn to trust the technology. Clearly, Kempczinski hasn't been in a customer-facing role for a while. If there is a problem, it's not the robot that people are going to threaten or abuse, it's the human workers. People aren't even willing to give human workers a chance to learn when they can see that they're wearing one of those "I'm in training, please be nice to me" badges, let alone a robot. You can't just slap a "please be patient, I'm a sentient intelligence learning to understand human speech" on an entire building. People don't read signs. For now, Kempczinski seems to think that automating the actual food preparation process would be a much longer term goal, and McDonald's will be reintroducing their range of McDonaldland characters as a Sesame Street style educational series of videos for workers and customers to understand why there are no more humans working inside a McDonald's building by introducing them to the newest McDonaldland character, the Job Burglar. A rambunctious scamp who goes from workplace to workplace trying to find unsecured jobs and steal them from under the noses of unsuspecting workers. Presumably that way they'll be too poor to not eat anything but fast food, and a perfect circle of capitalism will be formed. On to consequences of RoboDebt news! RoboDebt, the government equivalent of a ghost that haunts your toilet. RoboDebt has been in the news again as the settlement of the RoboDebt lawsuit went before the courts. Now, we've talked extensively about the horrible consequences of RoboDebt and the class action lawsuit that followed. So if you're interested in finding more background detail, go back and check out those episodes. But recently, a federal court has approved a $1.2 billion class action settlement. Between Centrelink, RoboDebt victims, and the federal government, branding the scheme a massive failure in public administration, which might be the next contender for the Guinness World Record for the biggest understatement in the history of inaccurately describing things. I'm still on phones to the officials and waiting for confirmation. Justice Bernard Murphy said that the use of flawed income averaging tools to raise debts was a shameful chapter. He also said that the federal government should have known that many people on Social Security do not have stable or consistent work and may earn income intermittently. After all, they spend a lot of time complaining that people need to work more, preferably on a farm somewhere. However, Justice Murphy was not convinced that the federal government knew the RoboDebt scheme was unlawful. Given the choice between a stuff-up and a conspiracy, one should usually go with a stuff-up, according to Justice Murphy. Now, I look forward to this new precedent, which is being set by the courts right now, more commonly being put in place. The precedent of see evil, assume stupid. I'm not suggesting it is a conspiracy, but they definitely knew from a very early point that it wasn't lawful. Emails between top tax officials were published that showed that they were told by the Department of Social Services that debts raised solely on the controversial income averaging method were not lawful debts. And while the email did not say when the government received the advice, it strikes me as having knowledge in advance of an unlawful act, knowing it is wrong, and then doing it anyway. And that is a classic conspiracy. And legally, one of the definitions of conspiracy is a person must have entered into an agreement with one or more persons. Well, the head of DSS certainly didn't enact this on their own. There would have been many discussions about what do we do with all the pause. But also, C, the offence of conspiracy is incomplete unless either the defendant or one other party to the agreement has committed an overt act pursuant to the agreement. An overt act is simply an act done pursuant to the agreement. And an overt act can be defined as an outward act that is done in furtherance of a conspiracy. And I would say following through with charging people under unlawful acts counts as an overt act. If knowingly acting on an unlawful action is not considered more than stupidity, it does change the shape of our legal system going forward. Clive Palmer will be left to run the country uninhibited. The man is a walking stupid act. Justice Murphy approved $8.4 million in costs to Gordon Legal and said the 680 people who objected to the settlement would be given the opportunity to opt out. QC and Kim Wexler, if she doesn't get killed in the Better Call Saul final season, Fiona Forsyth, who represented the group members, said the use of flawed income averaging tools to raise debts caused vulnerable people stress and humiliation, attempting to evoke an emotional response from the coalition, forgetting that they had their emotions locked away in indefinite detention so that they do not risk feeling bad for people left to ponder eternity in an indefinite detention. Forsyth said victims were treated like criminals and left feeling like welfare cheats, as they received rude calls from debt collectors and Centrelink staff. And that was before the Robodebt started. Afterwards, Centrelink morning meetings took on a very different tone.
One out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, and doghouse in that area. Checkpoints go up in 15 miles. Your fugitive's name is Dr. Richard Kimball. Go get him.
They had their tax returns garnished, were forced to take extra jobs or expensive loans, and suffered detrimental effects in their relationships and mental health, sometimes leading to self-harm. The automated matching of tax and Centrelink data to raise debts against welfare recipients the government claimed to have overpaid was ruled unlawful in 2019. The Commonwealth subsequently settled the case without admitting legal liability. Under the settlement, victims would receive $112 million in compensation and be repaid $720 million and have $400 million in unlawful debts wiped. Justice Murphy earlier described it as a good settlement, but also questioned how fair the ultimate distribution of funds would be. He said, you've got a series of people with strong claims and weaker claims. And rather than apportioning them, the strong claims get everything and the weak claims get nothing. Justice Murphy said, ministers and public servants should have known the method of using taxation income records to estimate a welfare recipient's average income was flawed. However, it is quite another thing to be able to prove the requisite standard that they actually knew the operation of the Robodebt system was unlawful. Seems ignorance can be an excuse after all. Now, the argument could be made, and as a judge, you would be considering sentencing decisions. Now, sentencing decisions have five purposes. Just punishment, which is to punish the offender in a way that is fair in all the circumstances. Deterrence, which is to discourage the offender, also known as specific deterrence or other people general deterrence, from committing the same or similar offences. Rehabilitation, which is to create conditions that help the offender lead a law-abiding life in the future. Denunciation, to denounce, condemn, or censor the offender's behaviour, that is, make clear to the community that the behaviour is wrong. And community protection, to protect the community from the offender. Now, each sentence we impose must take the following principles into account. Proportionality, the severity of the sentence must fit the seriousness of the crime. Parsimony, the sentence imposed must be no more severe than is necessary. Parity, co-offenders who are jointly involved in the same criminal behaviour usually receive similar sentences. Totality, when an offender faces more than one sentence, the total sentence must be just and appropriate to the offender's overall criminal behaviour. And crushing sentences. We avoid imposing a sentence so severe that it crushes any hope the offender will lead a useful life after release from custody. However, in some circumstances, such a sentence may be imposed if it is just and appropriate. A mitigating factor would normally be the offender's previous good character, which, quite frankly, the Liberal Party lacks. There is no previous good character to draw upon. And an aggravating factor would be a breach of trust by the offender towards the victim. Say, for example, pulling a random example, where a teacher commits a crime against a student, or where, say, a government commits an unlawful act against the citizenry. So, unless you ask Josh Frydenberg, who, responding to the settlement outcome, pouted that the issue has now been dealt with, and then he stomped his little feet and he ran away, saying there was a settlement, we have said we apologised. The Prime Minister has said that himself for the harm and the hurt and the hardship that have been caused by the administration of the scheme, delivering his apology with all the grace and humility of an 8-year-old who got caught stealing money from their sibling and had to return it and isn't allowed to leave until he apologises, and then takes the very adult route of reminding everyone what their sibling did, whining. It's very difficult when it comes to recovering debts, but it is a process that has been adopted by successive governments, and obviously we accept the settlement that has been announced by the court today. Obviously. Obviously. Duh. Not everyone of the 648,000 in the suit are happy with the settlement deal though. 680 have objected to the settlement and will be given the opportunity to opt out. Now, you might be confused as to why they wouldn't want some of that sweet, sweet $1.2 billion. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cash, cash, cash. A lead plaintiff in the settlement is having none of the government's shit, calling the response to the case inadequate, saying, "I'm furious with the treasurer and his comments today. I come from a profession, nursing, where our pillars of what we do are integrity and accountability. And if this was to happen in my field of work, there'd be complete public uproar." Fortunately, this plaintiff is not a fellow politician, or these comments would fuel an entire media cycle for days on end, mulling over the combative nature of the implications that the government is doing a terrible job. No, instead, they're just a nurse, and so nobody listens to them. Jennifer Miller, whose son's rubber debt played a very prominent role in taking his own life, objected to the settlement in a previous federal court hearing, arguing that no one in power had been held accountable. Centrelink had pursued her son despite knowing that he had mental health issues and also gave private information about him to the media. In another case where a single person shows more integrity and compassion than the entire government, one Miss de Somerville had realized Centrelink had taken the equivalent of 6 months' wages out of her account without warning when she tried to pay for her one-year-old's medication for a bad chest infection. She also said that pursuing the legal case only increased her debt, but she was still happy with the outcome for victims who were not able to advocate for their own situation. It's not about me. An idea so genuinely foreign to our current Prime Minister, he genuinely thinks that he was put in place by God to lay his hands of divine fate on as many people as possible. Moving on to environmental news! The Great Barrier Reef, the first of the soon-to-be-unveiled seven undead wonders of the world. Australia has a habit of using the Barrier Reef as a big selling point for their country, convincing tourists in the thousands to spend up big, jump on a plane, and fly over to swim in the very colourful home of Nemo, while simultaneously being in the top five countries of the world providing coal. We love a good contradiction. Which is why it is interesting that the government is claiming it has been blindsided by a recommendation to list the Great Barrier Reef as a World Heritage Site in danger. It is in fact counterclaiming that the UN body had told the government a week beforehand it would not be recommending the listing. Or so claims the Australian Environment Minister and the sus in Susan Lee. The UNESCO World Heritage Committee report cited successive reef bleaching events as being of particular concern and called for more government action on climate change. And let's just nip this in the bud. When they say action on climate change, they do mean positive action. While I agree with you that building more coal mines and attempting to sell people on a gas-led recovery are indeed actions on climate change, they tend to more skew towards the negative side of the action spectrum. The long-term outlook for the reef had deteriorated from poor to very poor. And that's a real problem for the coalition, as they have never acknowledged someone listed as very poor, unless it is to call them lazy for not getting a job. The draft decision says that the government strongly opposes the move, which would put its World Heritage status at risk, impacting tourism and other ventures, presumably those ventures that take the shape of BP building an oil rig to drill for oil in the reef. which strikes me as the biggest concern of the government. They don't want to lose their cash cow nor spend any money to fix the situation. Losing the tourism abilities of the reef would mean a great loss to one of the seven wonders of the economic world. But the coalition is being short-sighted, which, to be fair, is in character for them. They refuse to see the potential in this new ruined reef. As far as tourist spots go, well, if you're building a rig out into the water, you can expand on that rig and turn it into the world's first offshore theme park. Queensland is the home of Australian theme parks, after all. And if the reef gets ruined, well, then we just have to remarket it. It's no longer a site teeming with life and beauty. It's now ruins, like the Greeks or the Romans. We trick tourists into coming to our country to see the things that we didn't maintain. To take photos and all that carbon raised to fly out will actually no longer be a huge contradiction. They'll actually be adding to the ruined condition of the ruins. However, this might prove a bit of an issue given an Australian court has found that the government has a duty to protect young people from climate crisis. But given Barnaby Joyce's attitude towards children and families, it might be a bit much to ask. It might be a bit much to ask to expect a single solid commitment. Perhaps if these future disasters could limit themselves to important Liberal seats, then they will see the funds and attention necessary to remain safe. Eight teenagers, along with an 86-year-old nun, launched the case to prevent the approval of a massive coal mine. It was smart of the children to get an 86-year-old nun to get the Liberals' attention. They do love old people, and Morrison has a soft spot for God. But according to the rubber debt talk in Parliament, the government doesn't have a duty of responsibility to the poor. And with the amount of debt being piled on the future generations, they will be the poorest of us all. So no obligations will apply. In a landmark judgment, the federal court found the Environment Minister has a duty of care to young people. Well, hello again, Sussan. It's no wonder she's so upset by this UNESCO proposal that the reef is in danger. She doesn't want to get strung with child support payments for future generations of Australian children. Nobody wants that. Presumably the next step for the Australian government is to roll forward what they're calling Operation Terra Nullius, where they completely remove the role of Environmental Minister, maybe roll it in with some other completely relevant fields like, I don't know, infrastructure and foreign affairs and trade, and that way they can sell off the environment to the highest bidder and get us out of any child support payments, declare our environment as foreign-owned soil, and that way we have no environment to speak of. After all, the barrier reef is basically dead, so we can't make money off it for much longer. Best sell it off like an NFT or a GameStop stock before the gravy train runs dry. And finally, flying to space to distract from your earthly flaws, news! Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos just flew into space, or at least the edge of space, because he's a coward. All they are aiming for, in the end, is suborbital flights. And if you're lower than the space station, you aren't in space. I don't care about your 100 kilometers is technically the edge of space, Kármán line bullshit. That's like saying, if I'm in a US embassy, I've visited the US. Yeah, sure, I'm on US soil, but only technically, and not in a way that would impress anyone. But Amazon's giant attempt to get people to look at space so they don't focus on what's happening on Earth, like jangling a giant set of keys above our heads saying, look at us, look at us, look over here, look over here, there's a giant penis in the sky, to hope that we won't notice that Amazon will have to pay $62 million in tips that the US Federal Trade Commission says it shorted flex drivers for 2.5 years. Given how relentlessly they drive their workers, it's actually pretty impressive that it wasn't more. I mean, Woolworths did a bigger trade in wage theft. Oh, sorry. Underpayments with its $390 million and then $110 million in interest. You gonna let Woolworths beat you, Amazon? Huh? Is that the kind of person that you are? Regulators argued in a complaint announced in February that the company had failed to honour promises it had made in advertisements and other documents. at issue were statements that drivers in its flex program would earn $18 to $25 per hour, as well as 100% of the tips you earn while delivering with Amazon Flex. Now, over a 2.5 year period, the company failed to pay the full amount of tips they received from customers who were also told that delivery drivers would receive all the tips paid. So what did they do with all that extra money, I hear you ask? Let's have a look, shall we?
I want to thank every Amazon employee and every Amazon customer, because you guys paid for all of this.
Whoa! He said the thing. Guys, he said the thing. Jeff, I know that you've become all rich and isolated, living a life of luxury on your yacht. But generally, people don't like it when you steal from them, then send them a nice thank you note with the stationery set you bought with their stolen money. Doesn't matter how nice the calligraphy is. But hey, don't do that. Don't focus on that. Focus on this. Focus on this old lady who also went to space. This is Wally Funk. No jokes. That is genuinely her name. We're giving her her dues. So in 1961, Wally was one of 12 women who went through testing as part of the Women in Space program. The tests had been designed by Dr. Lovelace for the Mercury astronauts, who wanted to put women through the same tests to see if they would be good candidates for space. Now, they weren't taking women under 24, but they took Miss Funk. And across the board, the women who passed that initial round of testing did as well or better than their male counterparts. And of that group, all of these women were pilots who had logged hundreds or thousands of flight hours, in some cases more than the men who were selected for the astronaut program. After all, the testing was done and the male astronauts were chosen to go to space, the only question that remained was...
Where's Wally?
No, really. Where's Wally? Where did she go? Where did you put Wally? Until this flight, none of these women had gone into space until Bezos needed a big enough distraction from the fact that when Jeff Bezos was worth $18 billion, he reportedly claimed a $4,000 tax credit intended for families earning less than $100,000. And not just once, twice! Ho-ho! Once in 2007 and then again in 2011. He reportedly paid nothing in federal income taxes because he lost more money investing than he earned from other income, at least according to this report. Apparently, known trillionaire Jeff Bezos made so little in 2011, according to the US government tax code, that he was able to file for and receive a $1,000 per child tax credit, which households with over $100,000 in joint income weren't eligible to receive. But don't worry about that. Look, Jeff Bezos took Amelia Earhart's original goggles into space, which should sufficiently stop people from paying attention to the fact that an Amazon wellness guide tells workers to buy shoes at the end of their shift so that they better fit their swollen feet. Now, this is according to Vice. Amazon distributed a health and wellness guide to workers at a warehouse in Tulsa, Oklahoma, instructing them to train like industrial athletes in order to improve their performance on the job, failing to realize that Olympians are an unintentionally terrible, yet appropriately perfect comparison, as they don't get paid properly, dedicate large portions of their life to a path with no guarantees for success or money, often have to cover their own expenses, and the majority of them actually live close to the poverty line. But hey, they're fit! Aren't they fit? The guides tell workers to prepare their bodies for walking up to 13 miles a day and lifting a total of 20,000 pounds during a single shift, which is more than 14 kilos every minute for a 10-hour shift. discusses topics including nutrition, hydration, sleep, footwear, ergonomics, and injury prevention, with suggestions such as eat 5 to 9 servings of veggies per day. I mean, I'm not sure when they are eating them, as they're almost never getting any breaks. But sure, 5 to 9 serves of veggies a day. Monitor your urine color, which actually shouldn't be that much of a problem because, as we all know, it'll be in a few bottles around the workplace, all around you, just down there everywhere. Now, Amazon told Business Insider that the guide was created in error and that it has removed the guide. Apparently, it was only supposed to be circulated among managers and above, so they could laugh and laugh as they look down upon their factory of athletes. They even get their own complimentary hat and coach whistles. Clear eyes, full urine bottles, can't lose! But wait right there, Space Cowboy. Seems the Federal Aviation Administration doesn't want you in their secret club. Controversy. Well, what possible reason could they have for not including you? Let's see. To qualify as commercial astronauts, space goers must travel 50 miles or 80 k's above the Earth's surface. Okay, alright. Although this is only true in America, as NASA says it is 50 miles above the Earth, basically all the rest of the Earth acknowledges the Kármán line, a line 62 miles above the Earth, which is considered the edge of space. Typical, really, of America to use their own system while the rest of the world has agreed on something else, but hey. Altitude aside, the agency says astronauts must also have demonstrated activities during flight that were essential to public safety or contributed to human space flight safety. In a statement, the FAA said that these changes brought the wing scheme more in line with its role to protect public safety during commercial space flights. And if we know one thing about Jeff Bezos, he is not committed to the safety of others. So they were right to re-examine the title, to change the requirements. But they may as well have just written, FAA redefines astronaut as having flown out further than you can stack your money. That would definitely keep him in alignment, given that the Kármán line is 62 miles above the Earth, or 100 kilometers, 54 nautical miles, and 330,000 feet for you feet enthusiasts. And $1 billion, when stacked in dollar bills, is 67.9 miles high. So actually, no billionaire could ever claim to be an astronaut. I think we'd all be happy with this arrangement. But, you know, we could go in further. If you need to fly further than the amount you have in money, well, the richer you are, the further you'd have to go to actually be considered an astronaut. And ideally, the less likely you would be to come back. So Bezos, at $209 billion, he'd have to fly 14,204.68 miles into space. But also, just for safekeeping, FAA should probably make the definition of astronaut no Jeffs, no Richards, no Elon's club. I can get behind that. Thank you so much for sitting around and listening, watching, attending, whatever it is, however it is that you consume, smelling another episode, tasting, please don't taste our episodes, another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I feel like this one's gone a little bit long. I don't know, I haven't edited it yet at the time of recording this. But if you have enjoyed it, please tell some people, tell someone else, share it around, do all the liking stuff on whatever it is that you listen to this on, you know, give us a review. Remember, my policy is 5 stars, 1 stars, or don't bother. And if you're going to come out and see some festival shows next year, which I highly recommend that you do, I'm going to try and attend a few festivals with my brand new show all about my my experience in the workplace called Wage Against the Machine. I think it's going to be a fun one, and I'd love you guys to check it out. I do think it would really sit in your purview if you enjoy this. sort of material. Thank you for your time. Stay safe out there. Look after yourselves wherever you are. Wash your hands. And keep bugging the government to reinstate JobKeeper. Do it. Be good fun. Bye!